This is episode 6 of the Rhode Island Liberty Report. In this episode, we talk Reform Caucus, the Wranglin Dictate, guns, and plastic bags. Let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from LibertyRI.com. I'm Mike, and in the studio with me, as always, is my co-host, Eric.
How are you doing, Mike? How's everybody doing out there today?
Awesome. Ready to tackle the latest issues here in Rhode Island. So we're back from the holidays. I hope everybody had a great holiday. And
I did.
I did. It was fun with, you know, spend some time with the kids. We took the week off from work, so that was pretty nice.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's always good.
And you've got a young one too. That's which makes it even more fun.
She you know, it's funny when we just a little very short, quick anecdote here. When we took her to see Santa for the first time, so she's 20 months old, you know, so. She went to see Santa and she's super skeptical, right? Like she's like who is this guy, right? She's like, you know, not impressed. And then for whatever reason after that, she's just obsessed with Santa. I mean, we have Santas all over the house. She just wants to see Santa all the time. I actually ended up getting her like a stuffed Santa that she can carry around with her. It's still hanging around the house because she won't let go of the thing. It's like Santa's just going to be a part of our life now for like all through the summer, just all year round. I feel like so. But it is exciting because she understands a little bit more and you know, everything. So it was a good time. But I'm psyched to be back here.
Yeah.
It was a long break.
Long break. You know, rolling into 2019. And lots of changes, you know, going to be coming out. I'll talk about that in a minute. One thing I want to kind of hit on real quick is, the format of our show, right? We're a commentary program. We're going to be talking about people in public life and in the media and things like that. I mean, that's the whole point of our show.
That's what we do.
We're putting a libertarian spin on, or a libertarian perspective, I should say, on events within Rhode Island. So, you know, we're not talking about national, you know, federal stuff. We just talk about Rhode Island. So, we talk about people and people's feelings might get hurt or they might feel like they've been, you know, something's been said about them, which is fine. We understand that. And they contact us and that's fine. And we don't do interviews on the show. You know, we had Bill on that, so I think it was our second episode, our second or third episode.
Third episode, I think.
And we kind of discussed that afterwards and we'll probably do a different format from, you know, to stay on our set format here where it's just commentary. We might have guest hosts on the show from time to time, which we talked about, but, we're not going to do interviews, right. You know? And if we do an interview and we provide someone an outlet to either respond to something we've said or whatnot, we're going to do it as a bonus episode. It won't be the Rhode Island Liberty Report. It will be a bonus episode for Liberty RI.
And Liberty RI is more than just the podcast. Liberty RI is a website. It's an entirely different thing. Yes. There's no saying that there might not be other different podcasts that we end up doing that are just interviews or whatever. This is a particular show with a particular format and it's our thing. We're running it and we're going to set the rules here. Yes. We're going to dictate how things operate.
Right. And if, for instance, we decide to go on break for the holidays because we want to spend time with our families, people we love, and, you know, do things that, take a little bit of a break, and it doesn't fit into somebody else's schedule, too bad. If someone wants to come on the show and it doesn't fit into their schedule, that's just too bad. You know, and, you know, we're libertarians. We understand property rights, right? This is our show. We own this show. And nobody's going to dictate to us what and when we're going to do our show. So,
right. especially when we're trying to accommodate people,
right,
who, you know, feel like they've been attacked, and we're willing to talk with them, but on our time, on our schedule. Yeah, right. Exactly.
So, and when you do come back and try to bully us, that's it. End of game. You don't get a response. We're not going to. You know, adjust our schedules because you think we owe you something. We don't owe anybody anything. So
well said.
So that being said, the format of the show is commentary, not interviews. And again, like Eric said, moving into 2019, we've got a ton of, you know, to-dos and ideas that we want to do to expand Liberty RI. And some of that's articles, we're going to be looking at. We've already been approached, and I have some ideas for people to do guest writing and articles and whatnot. So we're definitely going to open that up on the website, so people have an outlet to write about things from a libertarian perspective. We're not going to take articles from progressives or from neocons or, you know, those type.
Yeah, we're very clear about what our perspective is and what our bias is.
Right. Now, that's not to say libertarians don't have issues they may vary their opinions on. Sure. And we're open to all of that within the libertarian sphere. You know, when you start deviating, and that's not to say that your article won't be responded by another responded to by another libertarian or commented on by another libertarian. And we're open to that.
Right.
We're open to the libertarian discussion. Again, podcasts, like you had mentioned, we're you know, potentially additional podcasts, other, you know, other types of formats, other, you know, other things. We're going to explore that. We might add a live, I don't say might, we're pretty sure we're going to add a live stream to our podcast here. That's, you know, technical, things we'll work out on that, but when we record, we'll stream it live to the Facebook page or YouTube. I haven't decided yet. And, we'll go from there. So that might be
a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. Something fun. And, then remote guest hosts too. We might have people call in as a guest host. You know, you're not an interview. It's, you're going to comment just like we comment.
Right.
And go from there. So that being said, we should get into our first topic. And there's a lot has happened, but we had to pick and choose. We only got so much time. And the first thing that kind of was kind of kicking off before the holidays was the whole Reform Caucus, movement, if you will, within the General Assembly, which is quite interesting, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, I got to be honest. I mean, you know, I've got my gut feelings about it. And I think that I struggle with it a little bit because on the one hand, you know, it is hard for me sometimes not to get wrapped up in this whole sort of good government idea that I feel is really sort of a red herring, right? I mean, it's like, you know how sometimes you'll say, well, voting for a Democrat or a Republican, it's sort of like Ghostbusters, right? You're sort of choosing the form of your destructor. You know, it's like, it doesn't really matter necessarily. It's someone who's going to increase government and basically and intrude on your life. Well, this is just sort of like, how are we going to go about doing that? What are the rules going to be that we're going to follow to ultimately intrude on your liberties and, you know, use force against you? So it's like, I keep reminding myself that because in the end, you know, I'm not sure how much it really matters how it is they go about like messing with our lives. Right. So there's sort of like a two-pronged thing here, right, in terms of this Reform Caucus. Right. So it's basically a bunch of progressives for the most part. Right. And they're focusing on these sort of quote unquote reforms. Some of them are rules based, which has been in the news mostly lately. But then there's other things like the line item veto, I think it was one of the things that they're pushing, an inspector general, right? These things that had come up already during the election cycle. Yep. You know, and it's, I mean, I don't know. How are you feeling about it, Mike? Because it's...
So, yeah, I think it's telling, right? It's kind of interesting in a way because it identifies certain people within the assembly, right? So
right.
When you look at who makes up the Reform Caucus, I believe it was originally, I think, 21, now down to 20 because we had someone resign before they took their seat, which is the District 68 election with Billy Hunt, who is on the ballot, by the way, officially. Signatures are in. I read that on his Facebook page.
Good news.
Yeah, good stuff. So we have an actual libertarian running for the General Assembly. Going back, but to the point is, so there's 20 people. When you look down the list, I mean, it's a who's who of who hardcore commies, progressives,
basically, yeah.
What they call themselves, progressives.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's very telling and it's an interesting, look to see what their tactics are going to be, moving forward, you know? So,
well, another interesting thing too, is that, And I think it was Rep. Chippendale, actually, I think, who mentioned this on, I think it was either Twitter or Facebook, I'm not sure, but that a lot of these things are things that the GOP caucus has been pushing for years and years and years and years, and all of a sudden it's like, it's cool, because the progressives are doing it, it's cool. And one of the points he made was that one of the members of this caucus, Teresa Tanzi, who...
Commie.
who has been in the legislature for some time now. She's not a newbie. And his point was, is that up until this particular session, she's been going along with the program pretty much, you know, uninterrupted. She has voted for the rules. She has never bucked the trend. She's been friendly with the speaker. She's, you know, and it wasn't until last session when one of her bills did not go through that she wanted that all of a sudden now she's, you know, she's a champion of the people, right? She's found religion all of a sudden,
right?
And her religion is the state, right? But
right.
But you know, so it's so
the god that failed.
I, you know, it's funny. Part of me is like, you know, it's a bunch of nonsense in terms of them trying to claim like this is something new, and at the same time, it's like, man, how ineffective is the GOP that they can't even own this. They can't even own this reforming the rules thing. It's not, no one's even talking about them. They're just like, it's all about the Reform Caucus has more members than the GOP.
That's true.
It's a bigger caucus than the Republican caucus.
So the progressive wing of the General Assembly outnumbers
the GOP.
The GOP.
In the General Assembly. And that's, I mean, here's another thought. I mean, do you think the GOP is going to line up with the progressives for these rule changes?
Right. Well, that'll be interesting to see, because obviously we know why. And Matt Allen brought this up on his show. And I listened to it at work. It was on and off. But generally speaking, his position was, look, you know, change is good when it's your guys doing the change. But then when the other guys do it, it's not so good, which we understand. Right.
Right.
But, you know, I go back to the problem really is the power that they have. You know, it's the power that the assembly has. What the rules are should be irrelevant.
Yeah, who has the power within the structure that's wielding the power? To us as libertarians, is sort of besides the point.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, it's basically a matter of who's wielding the power. To us, the issue is the power.
Right.
I mean, that is the issue.
And I'm not going to put words into Matt's mouth, but I got the feeling of making better government when the problem is government. You can't make something, you know, like government better. I mean, no. it just doesn't work. History has proven it doesn't work.
Even a small government doesn't work well. It's just a matter that if it's smaller, then it's not going to affect your life as much, but it still works just as poorly.
Yeah.
You know, it's just less influential.
Right.
And you know, that is something I think that's a message I think we are doing better at pushing, is this idea that there's something fundamentally flawed about government. And I want to make a distinction too quickly about, you know, because a lot of times the words government and the state get interchanged.
This is true.
And I think sometimes when we say, you know, we're anti-state or anti-government, people think, oh, that means no rules, right? But we're not necessarily anti-government. We're for a voluntary government in terms of the associations that we make, right? So,
and again, there's a spectrum, right? The libertarian spectrum.
Of
you've got, you know, the anarchist, anarcho-capitalist side versus the, you know, the more minarchist night watchman state, you know, basic services, policemen, firemen, military defense, that type of
thing. And those are some of the arguments and discussions that we have within the libertarian sphere that you talked about. You know, me personally, I've come to adopt the anarcho-capitalist method. It took me a while to get there. Look, publicly funded, state run government that uses force to get what it wants whenever it wants it is a fundamentally flawed model. It doesn't matter what rules you have in place, what rules you don't have in place, who has the power when, and it doesn't matter. It's all just ancillary. It's besides the point. And I think that's what we're trying to say here with this Reform Caucus is, look, they're pushing it because they want to be able to get their stuff through a lot easier. Right. And now it was Mattiello just today referred to them as the high tax club, which is brilliant.
Yes.
I mean, it's brilliant. And, you know, again, I have not been the biggest Mattiello fan. I think that the name should be the even higher tax club because the taxes are already through the roof. Yeah. Right. But it is hilarious, and it's a perfect name. I think you had another different.
Yeah, I say they just call themselves the Socialist Caucus.
Now here's
the
question: Do you think what do you think is a more toxic term in this day and age? Socialism,
right.
Socialist, or the high tax club?
That's an excellent point. Right now,
I'm not so sure.
Yeah, you know, especially you know, yeah. There's a socialist movement brewing within the country that you see everywhere. This, you know, Cortez that got elected to the General Assembly. Obviously, Bernie Sanders is out socialist.
Right.
He calls it democratic socialist, but
that's why I almost prefer the term communist.
Right.
Because I think you're not being hyperbolic, really. And I love the whole idea that, you know, it's not real socialism, it's democratic socialism. And look, these people in the Rhode Island General Assembly are democratic socialists. That's how they would define themselves. Okay. It doesn't make it better just because you put democratic in front of it. Again, this is the same idea of what are the rules by which you wield your power? Is it a democracy? Is it a monarchy? Does it really matter? It's power is power. You know, and this whole idea that you put democratic in front of a term that somehow that makes it better, it really doesn't. I mean, would democratic fascism be any better than fascism? Would democratic Nazism be any better than Nazism? No. Socialism sucks. Democratic socialism sucks too. It's just they go about it in a different way that maybe is more palatable to people.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, so so rename them themselves the Commie Caucus Commie Caucus, I think, is maybe what we'll coin the term.
The Commie Caucus.
We'll coin that term. So we could trademark that, right? Yeah.
We will.
Intellectual property.
Hey, you know, maybe Liberty RI will get into merchandising. We can get t-shirts made, mugs, you know, with all these things on it. You never know.
Yeah, well, someone's going to pay the bills, so maybe, you know, this stuff ain't free. So, one of the members of the caucus is
Marsha Ranglin Vassell, right? So this is another story that came out over the weekend. There was a big brouhaha on Twitter here between this Representative Marsha Ranglin Vassell, who she got in last term. Did she knock out a long term rep or did she take Carnevale's seat? I can't remember.
I don't recall.
I think she primaried a long term rep. I can't remember who it was in this moment, but it was kind of a big deal at the time. She knocked out, you know, a big name. And so she's new. You know, she's relatively new. And so basically just the quick rundown of what happened. And then I'm going to kind of go through the tweet history here a little bit because it is interesting. So basically she wrote this tweet that was basically saying, if you're not a teacher, then keep your mouth shut about education, basically. And I'll read the tweet. But and the story that really blew up was that Representative Newberry, who is a Republican, who I guess has some history with this Representative Marsha Ranglin Vassell, unbeknownst to him, it seems. But he commented on this tweet that she made and basically said, said what I just said, that it's kind of disrespectful. And she came back and basically said that he was being racist. So this was a big thing. And there's nothing less interesting to me than identity politics. And so I'm not even going to get into that. I want to get into the actual tweet that she wrote. What's interesting is, so before the tweet in question, she actually wrote another tweet that I had responded to on Twitter. All right, so I'm just going to read you what she wrote and then what I wrote. She wrote, you know, only when we recognize that our students are more than test scores, more than data, and only when we begin to value their teachers will we begin to see real and sustained improvements in education, hashtag I teach. So that's actually the original tweet that she wrote that started this whole thing. So I responded, you know, and I said, how about to start getting rid of the oppressive and intrusive federal state mandates and letting communities, teachers, and parents control the education of their children? Hashtag home rule. Okay. So that's what I wrote. All right. And so literally about 5 minutes later after I responded, this is what she wrote. And this is what grabbed all the attention. She wrote, most people who offer opinions about teaching and learning have never been in a classroom, haven't taken a course in education or educational psychology, have never had a real conversation with teachers or students. Then you should just stop giving opinions. You are not an expert. Hashtag I teach. Okay. So this really blew up. And another person who got wind of this was Erica Sanzi, who writes the Good School Hunting blog, which is great. If you ever really have a chance to go read it, goodschoolhunting blog. It's goodschoolhunting.com.
We'll post a link.
Yeah. Well, it's a great blog about education. She's really smart, former teacher. But anyway, she really kind of took issue with this whole thing. And so, look, here's the thing. On the one hand, she lists all these, she's basically saying, if you're not a teacher, then keep your mouth shut.
Right.
So my feeling was, okay, well, you're basically saying that parents can't have an opinion. I mean, it's one thing if you want to, I, you know, look, there's experts in all different sorts of fields, economics, healthcare, transportation, whatever, and they get preferential treatment, whether it's before the legislature, in the media, right? The whole idea behind social media is that lay people have a voice. They can give their opinions directly to their legislators or to media personalities or whatever. And what's more, quote unquote, democratic than that? But according to this representative, Marsha Ranglin Vassell, she doesn't want any of it. She wants you to keep your mouth shut. And it's not even like she wants to weight experts' opinions more than yours. She just doesn't want you to give your opinion. She's, you know, so, you know, what was your reaction to this?
Yeah. Mike? So again, the arrogance is astounding. It's just, it's so telling about the mentality of these people. Just shut your mouth, step in line, get in your place, sit down, be quiet, do what you're told. This is authoritarian, you know, just oppressive attitude that just permeates the politicians. We began the show, you know, talking about people just demanding things from us, and it's you know, who do you think you are? You know, it boggles my mind. But then there's this whole idea that only experts have a say in these matters, right? Like nobody else can possibly have an opinion or, you know, because they didn't go to school to become a teacher or whatnot. I presume most people listening have been educated at some point through the school system,
right?
Or homeschooled or however, but at some point in your life, you learn from somebody else. I mean, that's what happens, right? It's so you have experience as a learner that you can offer an opinion on, right? Like I learn, we've talked about this before. I learn a certain way. I'm a visual learner, right? I people learn different ways, and people, so you have that perspective. We all have that perspective to comment on, and seeing when we have children, seeing what's effective with our children, how our children are learning, how they're progressing, how they're developing. Anybody can observe that and understand it. So. The idea that you have to be an expert to make these opinions or have these opinions is bogus to begin with. And I also have always been leery of people who call themselves experts. You know, it goes back to my military days when someone steps up and says they're an expert in something. Very often they're trying to compensate for something, right?
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
You know, there's something to be said about someone, a humble professional that just lets their work speak for themselves.
Speak for itself.
You know,
And I think that, you know, the other aspect of this too is, you know, since the last 30 or 40 years, at least, I mean, the experts have been running the show. And they're not doing a very good job.
Right. How's it worked out?
I mean, how seriously should we take your credentials as an expert when the results are so, so poor? And also the idea that somehow after you graduate college or after you finish your formal sort of schooling, that your education just ceases to exist. I've learned more about various different topics, economics, education, for one. I've done a lot of reading. I've learned more about these subjects than I probably learned about my major in college at this point. I've been out of college longer than I was in college,
right,
and I've continued to learn. Now, just because I don't have some degree, I've earned some certificates online in different programs, but just because I don't have some degree from some gated institution, does that mean I don't know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Look, you don't know whether an opinion is crap or not until you've heard it. And the idea that you're going to tell people not to give an opinion, I mean, it actually shows a certain level of insecurity on your part.
That's right.
That you're so scared of other people's opinions. Now, I thought what was really interesting was that given this tweet that she sent out, you know, the representative Ranglin Vassell, about 6 days prior to this tweet going out,
mm-hmm.
sent out a couple of tweets. and I'm going to read them. And just think of, contrast them in your mind to what you just heard us read you about, you know, if you're not a teacher in the classroom or an expert, keep your mouth shut. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay, this is what she wrote. I was sick for an entire year and skipped the fourth grade. I left school in third grade and remember going back and finding myself in fifth grade. It was a Monday morning with a pop quiz. I named Christopher Columbus three ships. Who cared? That year, I learned so much from my grandmother. She continued, P.S. The year I didn't go to school might have been the year I learned the most. My grandmother was tougher than nails. She taught me stuff like how to sew, make mats with crocus bags and rags, how to plait my own hair, and which herb to pull up for a cold fever or whatever. Hashtag inspiration.
So she just contradicted.
Is that not the complete opposite of what she said the other day?
Right.
So, that's why you really got to take a lot of what these people say with a grain of salt. And, you know, it's infuriating. On the one hand, a week prior, you're saying one thing. You're saying how important, what you can learn outside of school. I'm just basically saying the most she ever learned in her entire education was the year she didn't go to school.
Right.
What does that say?
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me not to give my opinion. You don't have to listen to it.
No.
But I'm not going to stop giving my opinion because you don't think I'm an expert or because I'm not an expert. You know, I'm sorry. You know, and you can mute me on Twitter. You can do whatever you want. I don't care. But I responded to this whole thing, and it was quoted in the journal. And basically what I said was, you know, by her own logic, she should keep her mouth shut when it comes to things like economics, healthcare, transportation, anything that she's not an expert in.
Right.
Which is ridiculous. I want to know what her opinions are on all these things. I'm interested. I would never tell someone to keep their mouth shut and keep their opinions to themselves. So there you go.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And the funny thing is, right? It's another comparison between an analogy of a free market where you're offered a bunch of options and you pick and choose what you want. You know, same thing with ideas. You get a bunch of different ideas out there. People. Experts, non-experts, whatever, and you analyze that and you collect information and make, or you have a dictatorship where you can only this person can say this and it's a managed
right.
process.
And
right?
It goes back to the Wilson era. Actually, this is Wilson's thing was basically, we're going to have a government of bureaucrats, of experts. Yeah. And you may as well just send the legislature home because they're not experts in a lot of this stuff, right? Just send them home, let the bureaucrats run things and that's it.
And I'm sure there are legislators out there that have went into office with zero knowledge on a subject and soon became, or at some point became, well-versed in that subject. They took an interest in something. They educated themselves. They explored different ideas. So, you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, that's just, again, another telling aspect of what goes on.
Day in and day out, same thing, same day, different story, you know, or same story, different day, I should
right,
say.
Right.
That's what I meant.
So,
but moving on.
Yeah.
So moving on, one of the big issues undoubtedly that's going to come up this year is guns.
Over and over.
Over and over again. And just full disclosure, I think this is an important point for me to make here personally. Mm-hmm. I am a practicing Quaker. Yep. I personally am very anti-gun. And when I say that, what I mean is I have no interest in owning a gun. I don't like guns. I don't want them in my house. Okay. But I am not going to use guns of government to tell other people that they can't have them if they want to.
Right.
Okay. So look, this is coming from someone who does not like guns.
Yeah.
I don't like them, but you know, maybe Mike likes them.
I do.
He does. He likes guns. And guess what? I would be a huge hypocrite if I was going to use guns that are, you know, in the hands of a third party to somehow absolve myself from any sort of responsibility in using them to keep him from having one. That's my position. I can carry both of these things at the same time.
That's
and like, I don't like drugs, but I'm not going to tell someone they can't take them. It's the same argument. So I just wanted to get that out there so people know where I'm coming from. Because this is a tough issue for me, because personally, I don't like them. But
I'm glad you brought that up, because I thought of you the other day. I was reading a thread on, I believe it was on Facebook, a discussion about libertarians, and someone was trying to argue that libertarians, I think the premise of it, a friend of ours, Brian, premise of his thing was like, the libertarians can't make headway within the Republican Party. They need to just, the libertarians within the party need to step out and join the Libertarian Party and make a go of it.
Amen.
And we've talked about this before. Ron Paul proves that they will not let that happen.
Right.
So, but the discussion quickly became, you know, well, no, the libertarians are going to get co-opted by the socialists and the, you know, the quote unquote liberals, and that they will quickly become anti-gun and all this other stuff. And I thought of, I didn't post a comment. It's one of those things you start typing and then you just don't post, right? Because I it was about you and I didn't want to, you know, just,
oh, well,
it wasn't my place to do that.
That's thoughtful of you.
but I wasn't going to name you by name, but I was going to say, like, I have a friend who is a Quaker and a pacifist. I guess you would consider yourself a pacifist.
I am a pacifist, yes. Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, within the tradition of Quakers, right?
Yes.
So, but I know because of past discussions that you are, like you said, anti-gun as a person,
yep,
but would not impose that. So here you have somebody who, like you said, can hold two beliefs. Like,
of course.
And I know this because I understand your philosophy.
Well, right? Actually,
as a libertarian.
Actually, it's really one belief. It really isn't carrying two beliefs. The belief is, I'm a pacifist. I don't like to use force against other people. Right. You know, whether, you know, and I'll do my damnedest to try to persuade people, you know, in terms of the dangers of guns, and I'll give them my opinion as to why I don't like them, but I'm not going to tell them what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
I love having discussions about them and my personal feelings about them, but I'm, you know, I wouldn't even tell somebody what to do, let alone use the power of the state to force them to do something. That to me is not pacifist in any way, shape or form. It is totally antithetical to my beliefs. And so really I'm just holding one belief. It's just one belief, and it's non-aggression. And for me, it's pacifism. Non-aggression obviously doesn't mean that you're necessarily a pacifist. It means, you know, that people have a right to defend themselves. I, you know, as a Quaker, I'm John Dickinson. I'm the guy in the Continental Congress who would have voted against going to war. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just me personally. Mm-hmm. You know, as a pacifist, it's precisely why I'm a libertarian and why I'm an anarcho-capitalist, because I'm not going to use force against other people. In an aggressive manner. And that's what these gun laws are.
Right.
So talk a little bit about the legislation.
So I'll get into this just before I get into that. But, you know, the irony of it, right? These legislators want to use the force of government to take away guns from, you know, otherwise peaceful citizens.
The guns of government to take away guns.
To take away guns. So, I mean, there's iron, you know, the irony there is obvious. But so the legislation that was proposed so far, I didn't look it up today, so I don't know where it's at in the process. But it was essentially it's closing a loophole that's been known to most people within Rhode Island that are gun savvy, if you will. That there's a loophole within Rhode Island that allows you. There's no prohibition from you carrying a long arm in public. So like a rifle or a shotgun in public.
I didn't even know that.
So, and transporting the same thing. There's nothing that says you cannot do that. Now there are laws specifically, handguns and revolvers, and that just didn't extend to long guns. Now, nobody's done that in the state that I know of. That's open carried a rifle.
I've not seen it.
I've seen it in other states across the country, similar situations. And, you know, people do it to push the buttons and see how far they can get. My suspicion in Rhode Island, they would arrest you anyway. They charge you with, you know, disturbing the peace or,
right,
you know, creating some kind of, you know, hysteria because you're doing that. But so just to, I'll go through the amendment, if you will, that they're the addition they're trying to add into the legislation or the law that covers this. No person shall carry a rifle or shotgun in any vehicle or conveyance or on about the person, whether visible or concealed, except in the person's dwelling, house, or place of business, or on land possessed by the person. Every person violating the provisions of the subsection shall, upon conviction, be punished by imprisonment for not less than 1, not more than 10 years, or by a fine of up to $10,000, or both, except on a first conviction under this section. The person shall not be eligible for a suspended or deferred sentence or probation. This subsection shall not apply to those engaged in lawful hunting activity as provided in Chapter 13, blah, 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 or lawful target shooting within the state, otherwise except pursuant of 11-47-9. So basically they're saying you cannot carry a shotgun or a rifle on your body in public or in your vehicle, transport it in your vehicle, unless you're going hunting or you're going to the range to go target shooting. So,
which, how could you, couldn't you just say that's what you're doing anyway? I mean, how are they going to know where you're going?
Right. Well, that's
right.
That's a good point, right? You can say you're on your way to the range.
I mean, I'm not advocating anyway that people lie. Right. I'm just trying to look at the reality of human nature and,
right.
And what's likely to happen here.
But this goes to an interesting point. You know, when you compare the gun laws to the Rhode Island Constitution, right, the state constitution, not even going to the federal constitution, just the state constitution, which is often referenced by constitutional scholars when they're referencing the intent of the Second Amendment. They reference other states' constitutions that were written around the same time and the purpose of this.
Right, to give context.
So the Rhode Island state, I believe it's Article 1, Section 22, off the top of my head, is the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's it. There's no other clauses. There's no other, you know, preamble. That's it. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So the right to keep and bear arms shall, it doesn't say anything about a militia. So
it's pretty clear.
It's pretty cut and dry. So the fact that they've imposed these rules in the first place on handguns and revolvers, that shouldn't even be there. It shouldn't exist. So now they're trying to extend right. that to again, like I said, long
arms. Yeah, and now without a constitutional amendment.
No, they're just adding.
I mean, it's like, you know, going through the amendment process would be too difficult. They never pass the stuff.
Right.
Right? And so what do? They just pass laws that they only need a majority. And that are, I mean, look, I'm not a legal expert, but I can read and I can tell you that, you know, all of these gun laws seem like they're pretty clear violations of that article of the Constitution. And if you don't like it, then change the Constitution.
Right.
Right. I mean, at least go through the process that's available, and do it the right way. But of course, like the classic government, it's going to be abused. They're not going to do things, quote unquote, the right way. And so it's not that big of a surprise, you know, that they would do that.
Now, I guess in the big scheme of things, is this a big deal? I think it is. But, you know, people, even pro-gun people will say, well, you shouldn't be doing, you know, I mean, I run into them all the time. You know, they make excuses, right? The bump stock ban. You know,
right.
Well, that's a novelty. And again, you don't get the point here. It's another infringement on your rights. And again, it's not within their scope to be doing this.
Yeah, I don't really see how owning anything, with the exception of another person,
right,
should be a crime.
Right. If I want to carry a rifle out in public, and do no harm to anybody, what business is of yours?
Right. And just putting my sort of my stepping out of myself a little bit here and trying to look at it from the perspective of someone else. You know, what if you've got someone who's just incredibly paranoid and they're afraid every time they go outside that they might get attacked? You know, look, Providence is not the safest place in the world these days. And even just stepping aside from the sort of walking around outside with carrying a gun, even in your car, what if you've got a large sum of money on you, you know, and you're going to the bank? I'm just trying to look at reasons why someone might want to carry a gun in their car, right? Or transport. And my point is, like, just reading this legislation, it's so specific. There's so many exemptions and little tiny details and right. things that, I mean, basically everybody and their brother who's in law enforcement is obviously exempt from this law, right? So it's totally cool for them right. to carry guns, as if cops never use guns in a violent manner against anybody, you know, unlawfully,
right?
Right. So it's a matter of hypocrisy for me that all of these people who want to pass this stuff are so anti-gun, but they're only anti-gun if it's private citizens who have the guns. If anything, they want government to have more guns.
Right.
Right. The more guns the government has at its disposal, the more force they're able to wield, and they want bigger government. And so they want basically what there's more guns. They're in the hands of government, not private citizens. But to me, I don't see a difference.
Right. So it's funny because, you know, Rhode Island was technically an open carry state. Well, it still is until this law is passed for long arms. Just a couple. There's another section that adds something different. I'll get to that. I mean, I should have started off with this. The representatives that have introduced this bill are Diaz, Slater, Toban, Blazajewski. Is that how you pronounce it?
Blazajewski?
Yeah.
And Blazajewski.
Blazajewski. And Maldonado. So those. That's the crew. So the second provision that it's further down in 1147.30 section sale, transfer, and delivery of firearms to minors, they've added, where is it? They've added if the firearm. So basically, I won't read it, but it says if you sell a firearm to someone who's 18 years of age, under the age of 18, I should say, and that person commits a crime of violence. Then the person who sold them that firearm are therefore liable, and can be convicted, not less than 15 years.
Wow.
The sentence shall be consecutive to any sentence the person may receive for committing the underlying offense as set forth in subsection of this section. So if you, again, it's illegal if you're under 18 to own a firearm. So if an individual sells a firearm to someone who's, sold, transferred, given, conveyed, or caused to be sold, transferred, given, or conveyed to a person under the age of 18.
And does it say something too about them? Like, they have to have a reasonable, they have to be able to prove that they didn't know that they were 18 or something?
Violence, the person found. So in Rhode Island, if you want to sell a firearm to somebody, now there's some interesting words here, but we'll just deal with this selling aspect of it at this point. If I want to sell a gun to you, we have to go to the gun shop and do the transaction through a licensed firearms dealer.
Okay.
So that's why the Rhode Island has closed the gun show loophole.
Right.
Right. So there's no private transfers in Rhode Island anymore. So if I were to sell it to you, I've sidestepped that price, not you, but someone underage, I've sidestepped that process already, you know, presumably,
because right.
They've not checked. When you do go to buy a gun through a gun dealer, they're going to check your ID and all this other stuff. So that's one. But there's also some interesting things here. It says transferred, given, conveyed, or caused to be sold, or transferred, given, or conveyed. Now, given, how about taken?
You know, right.
Like, it doesn't say taken in here, but conveyed is that if someone takes my firearm, comes into my house and steals it.
Right. Like if you didn't have it locked up properly or something.
Right. Or what if it is in your house and your child takes it and goes and does something with it. Right. Now, again, there's a certain parental responsibility, but are you then therefore liable and going to prison for 15 years because somebody within your house? Just someone living in your house, you know, your cousins in town and living in your house and they're 17 years old and they, you know, take your weapon. And,
or what if you sell to someone who's under 18, but they give you a fake ID and says they're over
18. That's true too, right?
I mean, it's like selling alcohol to someone who's not really 21, but you don't know they're 21. Do you send the bartender to prison for 15 years because they, you know, got into a drunk driving accident?
Right. That'd be a little more difficult because, again, you go through the NIC system, the FBI system. So I'm presuming when you enter that person's information in there.
But if you just did it like one-on-one, like you did it outside the sort of the law of going through a gun dealer. If I just wanted to sell it to someone on Craigslist and they came in and I wanted to make sure they were 18 and I asked for ID and they showed me a fake.
Right. Well, that in and of itself is illegal because you have to go through the gun dealer.
But is it illegal to where the point you're going to go to prison for 15 years?
I'm not sure what.
Right.
I'm not sure what the.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that
it's not on this sheet.
So it's really it's another version of Kristen's law. And sort of the way I'm seeing it is only with guns.
Right.
It's like, you know, you're not actually the one committing the violent act, but you're going to. you know, you're going to prison for a long time.
Yeah.
15 years, a long time.
And again, the average gun person is going to agree with this. I read on a couple of the gun groups on Facebook, and most people didn't have a problem with this section. But when I'm reading it, it's very ambiguous. So it leaves, I think, too much room for interpretation. And again, I'm of the opinion there should be no gun laws whatsoever.
Right.
That's a separate issue. I'm just speaking in the context of this proposed legislation here. So I thought that was quite interesting to see that in there as well. I think this year is going to be a huge, this year and next year, to be honest with you, a huge push in the anti-gun, you know, the gun control debate. And we're going to be talking about it more. And it'd be interesting to hear your perspective from someone, you know, that has a different personal opinion, but maybe not necessarily a different opinion from a government.
Well, it's interesting the words they use. And this is sort of the last thing I'll say about this is, you know, the whole idea of it being anti-gun, right? Again, they're not anti-gun, right? They're pro gun control for private citizens. And that's a better way to say it, because they're pro government guns. They're not anti-gun, right? So, you know, they know what they're saying when they phrase things a certain way. And messaging is so important in all of these sorts of discussions, because certain words, certain phrases, I think, make us view or feel a certain way about issues. And, you know, look, for me, as someone who is sort of anti-gun in my own life, hearing a bunch of people say that they are passing legislation that's anti-gun just viscerally is like, oh, you know, it's like, good. You know what I mean? Just for a split second. And then I know what they're really doing, and I know who they really are.
Right.
Right.
I think it's interesting. A couple of things, right? So, lost my train of thought. The idea that, you know, you're anti-gun yourself personally, but you essentially, I don't say ignore, but accept the that other people can use them to protect themselves or possess them or own them, you know, own property. But why can't the anti-gun legislators or anti-gun people have that same? They can be personally against fire, not own one, not touch one, not possess one, not allow one in their own private property. I'll save that for another time. It's an interesting debate. People argue about guns not allowed in certain businesses.
Yep.
That's private property. You don't get to say it. Your constitutional rights do not carry over onto my property. Right. It's
hard for me to think of any other motivation that they could have aside from wanting more power with government and less power to the people to defend themselves against that government. Because, you know, so as a pacifist, right, theoretically, if someone were to break into my house, and let's say I'm alone, there's no, my family's not there, it's just me, and they were to put a gun to my head, right, as a pacifist, theoretically, and I can't say I would actually do this, right, but theoretically, I would rather them kill me than me sort of sacrifice my soul by killing them. Right. That's the theory behind pacifism, right? Is you'd rather be killed than kill someone, right? I would never in a million years force that on somebody else.
Right.
If someone else is home and they want to have a gun, because if someone breaks in with a gun, they want to be able to shoot that person in order to preserve their own life, then I understand that that's their right as a human being to make that decision for themselves. I'm not going to force my pacifism on you and put you in a position where you have to do what I think is morally right, because that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm coming from with that.
Yep.
Now, obviously, in my private life, I try to persuade people that pacifism is a good thing and blah, 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 blah. But that's totally different than forcing people and in rendering people defenseless when they don't want to be or aren't, you know, ready to do that of their own volition or voluntarily.
Right. Just last thing that I wanted to, and I just saw this the other day, Jason Knight, one of our favorite Reform Caucus members, commie caucus members.
He's my favorite.
is a huge anti-gun guy.
I've got a poster of him on my wall in my bedroom.
And he was, the picture was him signing some pro, or like a pro abortion, you know, pledge.
Oh, defense of reproductive rights.
Defense of reproductive rights pledge, I believe, that they're signing. But I just found it ironic that during, you know, he's always about saving the children from guns, but yet he has no problem signing. Now, that gets you into the abortion debate, which we're not going to cover. But I just think it's, again, ironic that he will sign this. You know, he wants to save the children.
I would love to have that discussion at some point because it is such a good one.
Yeah.
When it comes to abortion, but and that is sort of interesting. I think it's also interesting that he's so into this gun control legislation when, you know, he voluntarily takes on defendants in his law practice who are charged with gun crimes.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah,
that's another one.
But we have a little bit
on the lighter side.
A little bit of time left. We'll touch on this one. This is we like the lighter side of things here at
I'll say it's lighter side, but it's just less
heavy.
Yeah.
Which is lighter.
in the vein of our snow shovel shoveling.
Exactly.
Thing. So yeah, so Bristol and several towns, actually should say several towns in the state have recently laws recently come into effect, ordinance I should say, within these towns to ban plastic single use plastic bags. So your typical Stop and Shop Shaw's type bag. So they're now banned and you can no longer use them, and it's all in the name of saving the environment. And quite interesting. So I was looking at a thread in one of the town specific groups that is part of the ban, and a bunch of everybody was, you know, it was kind of funny. A lot of people were just mad because the bags that they were getting, the paper bags that they were getting, were very thin and they were breaking. So the groceries were like, you know, they'd try to carry it to the car or up the stairs and it would break, and their jar of pickles would smash on the pavement. And, you know, just people like, you know, just saying this is so stupid.
Right.
And then the response to them was, but you're saving, you know, you're saving the environment, and you should feel good about that and bring a multi-use bag with you next time and you won't have that happen. So I just find it interesting that they're going, again, use the force of government to make sure businesses do not give out plastic bags to people because they say so, you know.
Well, and certain plastic bags.
Right.
Right. Because in this article in the Narragansett Times, there's, again, just like the gun legislation, there's tons of exemptions, right? Single-use plastic, some exceptions. Plastic barrier bags, like those used to transport produce, meats, and baked goods, are exempt.
Right.
Right? Double-opening plastic bags, like laundry dry cleaning bags. So, garbage and pet waste bags, right? Okay. So it's almost like...
bags containing prescription drugs.
The laundry people complained. You know, the local laundromat complained. They're like, okay, you can use that plastic bag. Or they're not even consistent in terms of if plastic is really that dangerous, why would you let anybody use it?
Right. So, and of course, I'm going to assume bread bags are in that group. You know, bags that they did say produce bags, right? So you have your bags, your apples come in, and meats and baked goods, and it's just. Right, so there's all these exemptions,
and they're already saying too that they don't even want you using paper bags.
Yeah,
they want you to use these reusable bags, and it's not even like you get to decide what a reusable bag is. It's very clearly defined here, Mike, as having stitched handles in a minimum thickness of 4 milliliters.
So who's the bag police?
Yeah, who's measuring the thickness of the bag?
Is somebody out there with a micrometer or a calipers measuring the?
It's so hilarious. I mean, and here's the even scarier part, right? Is they're basically telling you that this is just social engineering,
right?
Right. They're saying this is the guy. Let's see. What's his full name here? Oh, his last name is Flanders. But anyway, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
He basically says here that the goal here is really the longer haul of changing our mindset. Really says it all right there.
Social engineering.
And look, quote right here, they want to keep their options open to adding other plastics, like plastic straws.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be next, right?
It says it right here in the article.
Yeah.
They're already saying it.
And the fact that they want to change your mind or the mindset, the way you think, by using force.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like they want to put...
You will change your mindset.
You will change your mind or else.
And if you don't change your mind, well, you're going to change your actions because we're going to force you to. And
right.
And it's just so silly.
So the reality is, if they've got so many people that support this, right? They've got so many people on their side that... Well, one thing before I go into that the irony here. The when plastic bags came about, it was in response to paper bags. If I don't know if you remember that. So back in the day, like I remember, you know, you had to cover your books in school, right? And you used the grocery store bags and the heavy. So it was a response to that because that was, you know, depleting the forests and all this. So it was an environmental issue back then. So they came in with paper.
Because at that time you couldn't recycle paper probably, right? So
I presume so. Yeah. So I was when I was younger, so I don't remember exactly the details, but that was, so the plastic bags replaced that from an environmental standpoint. And there are other issues and I should have pulled it up for this, but, where they say that now they're going back to paper bags and all these alternative things, but there's so much, you know, the production of paper bags is more damaging to the environment. It uses more water, uses more energy, it uses more, you know, of these resources. Same thing with cotton and canvas bags. You know, the process the cotton
right.
to make the da 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 da. So it goes on and on. So it is again. It's this you know movement to change your mind.
And it's not even like you can't recycle plastic bags now.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. Everybody I know has a little drawer or cabinet in their house where they store all their plastic bags from their shopping that they reuse for all sorts of things. And when they don't, they take them down to Stop and Shop or Rite Aid or wherever and recycle them. That's what I do.
Yep.
All right. Now, just one quick thing I just want to add here because I think we're running out of time. But this sort of goes with the whole listen to the experts thing.
Yep.
Okay. So in the article, it says, the ordinance saw widespread community support with members of Girl Scout Troop 560 from Matunic and dozens of students from Curtis Corner Middle School who, through their own research, figured out that approximately 9.5 million plastic checkout bags are used each year in South Kingstown among those who advocated tirelessly for its adoption.
But, okay, so that's hilarious.
I mean, really?
Yeah. So they're learning math.
You know? I mean, that's great.
Their statistics.
But those are the experts we're citing in this article. It's just hilarious. It's so funny.
I got sidetracked when I was talking earlier, but so if there's so many people that are pro or anti-plastic bag, you would think it would be easy to convince people just not to use plastic bags and convince businesses to provide an alternative that will appeal to people that don't want to use bags. And they can even advertise that in their front store window saying, we use biodegradable bags. Come on in. I posed this question in the group. I said, would you be willing to pay a couple cents extra at a store to use a environmentally friendly bag or as opposed to a plastic bag? The answer I got back was, yes, I would certainly do that. And they only cost a little bit more and da da da. And I said, bingo. Like the guy that responded just admitted that he would take his own money
right.
to this business and support a business that was using environmentally friendly bags.
Yeah.
And so the market would speak at that point. It would send a signal to the market.
And according to this article, they had, you know, 27 out of 30 businesses who thought this was a good idea. Well, if they think it's a good idea, why aren't they doing it voluntarily?
Right.
So, you know, it's
if people speak
nonsense.
With their, you know, they demand from their you know, the market that they want these bags that the market will provide. So another interesting aspect to this, and I thought it was quite interesting, along with plastic bags, a big environmental concern are the plastic six pack rings, right? You hear about that all the time. The little, you know, six rings that hold your cans together. There's a company down in Florida that just came out with a six pack rings that feed sea turtles rather than kill them. It's a sea-friendly, because a lot of the problem is these rings get wrapped around fish and in birds and you know, entangle them and whatnot. So the market has responded with a not only an environmentally friendly six-pack ring device, but it also is food for the turtles that it was hurting.
That's early. Brilliant. I love it.
The market responds.
The market responds.
And the market provides.
There's a bumper sticker for you.
Yeah. So.
So anyway.
On that note.
Man, it's so great being back in here. I really have missed this over the past few weeks. Even, you know, it was great being off for the holidays and having that time. But I'm so glad to be back. And we're glad to have you back. And again, we love the engagement on social media. Please contact us. You can find on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Liberty RI, or on Twitter, Liberty RI as well. You can find the podcast on any major podcast platform, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. And please, if you was anything you want to hear us talk about in the podcast, don't hesitate to email us. You can email me at eric@libertyri.com or mike@libertyri.com. Great to be back. We look forward to next week's episode, and we'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.